Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
One of the sworn order who tend to the Eternal Gallery and Archive and call it home.
I'm Captain Burnham of the Federation Starship Discovery. Thank you for the speedy response.
Oh, we saw you coming. Very exciting. We love visitors. I'll be explaining how to get into the Archive in a moment, but first there's a little speech we like to give. The Eternal Gallery and Archive is proud to house the largest known collection of historical and cultural artifacts in the Alpha or Beta Quadrant.
Sorry to interrupt, but we're in a bit of a hurry.
Of course. We can talk while we travel. Sending coordinates and velocity adjustments now. As this is your first visit into the Archive, please follow my instructions precisely and do not deviate. The Archive is not responsible for any damage, dismemberment, or death that may result in your failure to do so.
Was that meant as a joke?
I guess we'll find out.
Slurpity burp burp, slurp slurp, slurpity burp burp, a slurp slurp, slurpity burp burp, a burp slurp, slurpity burp burp, a burp slurp, burpity slurp burp, a burp slurp, slurp slurp slurp, a slurp burp, burpity slurp slurp, a light burp, garbage garbage snarp, a burp burp.
They warned us. They warned us what would happen. But we didn't listen.
A beepity, a sneak deep, a greep a greek agree, a wee wee. Slurpity slurpy slurp, a blarp slurp, slurpity burpy slurp, a garp burp, murmity nerp nerp, a slurp turp, gurgity furpity gur, a burp derp.
They told us what would happen if we let him in, and we did it anyway.
A furpity gurpity herp, a jerp kerp.
All right.
Why didn't you listen to what he was saying?
Okay, let's go ahead. Let's start this podcast thing. If you guys are cool with that, are you guys cool with that, Jesse?
That's what I've been saying.
Dan,
this whole time.
All right. So welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We can be real chill this week because we're back to just doing the one episode.
Good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of stressful to do two episodes plus extra stuff.
Like, I mean, it's a fun stress, but it is. It's not something you want to be doing every week.
It's especially hard with sounds because you get so many sounds collected that it's harder for me to choose which one to play.
The soundscape becomes madness.
Yeah, so it's you want a lot of sounds, but not too many, because if there's too many, I end up playing like overall less sounds because it's too stressful
Fewer
to pick
sounds.
Them up.
I apologize. But yeah, I'm sorry. It's a compulsion. It is a compulsion. I'm sorry.
You end up playing less sounds, and I'm not talking about ratio wise. I'm saying you play less sounds because they're Patrick's making a funny face. Overall, because it's hard to choose from all the sounds. So because you have more sounds, you have to play less of them.
Yes, I think those concerns are important concerns. But luckily, we don't have to do that every week.
Should I say that less times?
Don't worry about it. It's all good. All right. Hello, and welcome to the 240th episode.
Damn.
This is episode 240.
Great.
Of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Wow.
All right. Yes. And so this week, just the one episode, we will be discussing
Labyrinth.
Now, we'll get to the whole definition of a labyrinth and how it differs from a maze and all that later on. Because we do have a second break fun 'em up that's all about maze and labyrinth facts.
Amazing. Is it called Amazing Labyrinth Facts?
No, because I hadn't thought of that.
Well, now you have time.
No, now you thought of that, so we're all set. But the beginning bits of the podcast.
You swore Targoon.
It makes me think of like a tagine, you know, like the special pot, you know, it's like a Moroccan You know, North African way to cook meats. Really good. Tagine.
I don't have time for games.
All right. It's got Star Trek number 240 discussing labyrinths. However, a reminder that folks can and indeed should check out our Patreon for a growing library of bonus content that is very low cost.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have it at $3 a month right now. Lots of good stuff. We're adding new stuff all the time. And if you like, look, check back a couple episodes in the feed. We did throw up one of our Patreon episodes up on the free feed in full. So check that out. It's about Star Trek jokes. It's a good one. It's better than the title might have you believe. So check it out. Hmm? And of course, we are always welcome to have suggestions for what you'd like to see on our Patreon feed. And you can get free previews. So, you know, if you don't want to pay the money, no worries. You can go check it out, but you can at least listen to some of the free previews. All right.
Prove that you deserve this uniform.
All right. It is indeed a packed show, even though we're only doing the one episode, so we should continue along. So, so first we have correct 'em up.
But first, there's a little speech we like to give.
We have a correct 'em up from Ferdinand.
Did we fuck up again?
No. Well, you'll see. It's an email and a correct 'em up from Ferdinand. And Ferdinand says, "Gentlemen, I love your show. You guys have three distinct voices, like the Beastie Boys."
Wow! Give me the microphone.
All right. Now here's what we're gonna do.
So am I ad rock?
Here's what we.
Oh, am I the gang in the
Here's what I want us to do. I unfortunately know the answers, but Jesse, Dan, who do you think he's assigned to each of us? Dan, you think he's assigned Ad Rock to you? Jesse, what do you think?
I think I'm Ad Rock.
Jesse, which one do you think you are? There's Ad Rock, Mike D, and MCA.
MCA.
You think you're MCA?
I don't know. I'm not.
All right.
Wait a second.
Not super.
What
well
do you think
though.
I am? What do you think I am?
I get them all mixed up. Which is the one that's married to Kathleen Hanna?
I think that's MCA.
Oh, I think I'm MCA then.
I like how you're really taking it seriously. How about I just read what Ferdinand says here?
All right.
Ferdinand says, Dan is like Ad Rock.
Oh, I was like Ad Rock.
An energy verging on the manic.
Oh, okay.
Patrick,
there we go.
Patrick is like Mike D, smooth and extremely articulate. Yeah. Jesse is like MCA, punctuating things with the basso profundo.
We were almost correct.
And check it out. Ad Rock was the one married to Kathleen Hanna. So I was right.
I mixed up my names.
So I was right. I was going with Ad Rock. I was saying specifically the one who was married to her, and that was Ad Rock, which I was right. So I got it right. I knew it.
That would make because his name is Adam. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Because I'm like, because my voice is all high pitched and manic and crazy.
He's that guy.
He's not high pitched.
Well, it's higher pitched. I'm more tenory.
Oh, man, my name is Dan.
Yeah, I sound like that. So wait, Jesse's Dan, him. Jesse's,
so I'm the guy that died.
Jesse's right. MCA because of why? Because he punctuates.
He punctuates things with the basso profundo.
And why? Why are you?
I'm smooth and extremely articulate. Although he's going to challenge that. Challenge that assertion.
That was his own assertion.
That was his own assertion in the, that's my assertion. He said, alas, I must give a correctum up about the extremely articulate one. He's talking about me.
Wait, he's correcting his own thing?
He's talking about me. No, he's saying, he described, okay.
Wait, so he's
two separate clauses to this email.
First he said you are smooth and articulate,
yes.
And now he's saying you're not smooth and articulate?
No. He's pointing out an issue, a valid issue that he's...
What the hell?
He says, alas, I must give a correctum up about the extremely articulate one. On several occasions, Patrick has made the mistake of using the subject pronoun I, where the object pronoun me would be needed.
Oh
shit. You thought you were super smart and fancy. You got too cute for yourself.
For example.
You got too cute and ended up getting it wrong.
Sometimes will happen.
For example, at 23:50, at minute 23 and minute 23:50 seconds of the most recent episode, Patrick said, "Check out our social media if you want to see some pictures of Dan and I."
Ah.
Where it clearly should have been
Dan and me. Yeah, because pictures of me. Because you take out Dan.
Is the object of the preposition of.
Yeah, that you just take out the Dan part and see which one makes sense.
And he says, I trust that you'll be attentive to this matter going forward. Other than that, please keep up the good work. Ferdinand in New York. Now, thank you, Ferdinand, for pointing it out. Because from a basic sense, you're 100% correct. Mm-hmm. And you noted that this has happened multiple times, and I believe you. However, being the child of an attorney and trained from a young age to defend any position, no matter how preposterous. I would argue that in this case,
So you do admit it.
I was correct.
You do defend positions you don't believe in from time to time. You just like to argue.
Is this something you're just discovering now?
You argue.
You literally are just discovering. We've known each other for like.
I know, but you always deny. You're always like, no, that's what I really believe. You're just arguing just for the sake of like
sometimes
being.
Sometimes I believe it. Sometimes I don't.
Well, then you might as well never believe it.
No, I disagree with that proposition.
No, because if you sometimes do and sometimes don't, well, like there's no rules.
Hey,
it's chaos.
Dan, how about this, Dan? But you listen to my argument, my defense of this particular example that he's cited.
And you admitted
and then
it
you
like.
You let me know what you think.
You said that as if I was ridiculous to suggest it because it's just so obvious. But when I pointed out in the past, you were like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, okay. So I would argue.
Oh, which reminds me about something about Twitter I want to bring up after this.
All right. Well, put a pin in the Twitter thing. We'll get back to that momentarily. But I'm just going to argue that in this particular example, again, to remind folks, he said, what I said was check out our social media if you want to see some pictures of Dan and I.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that in this example, I may have and probably did intend the sentence to continue thusly. Check out our social media if you want to see some pictures of Dan and I partying it up at the Whistle Speak premiere.
Mm.
Ah, I think I can make it work that way.
No, I don't think so. Well,
yes.
So if you want to see some pictures of Dan and me.
Check out our social media if you want to see some pictures of Dan and I partying it up at the Whistle Speak premiere.
That would still be me. Because
Dan and me?
Yeah, but take out Dan. Take out the.
If you want to see me
and
at the,
I
at
partying.
The whistle hole.
If you just take out the and Dan
yes,
part.
Check
and
out
it,
our social. Exactly, you're right. That's the way to do it. Check out.
That's what I said.
Check
I'm like,
out our
I said that
media.
Like three
I know,
times.
Yes, and I'm agreeing with you.
After the fifth time.
Check out our social media if you want to see some pictures of Dan, of I partying it up at the Whistle Speak. It still works.
No, it doesn't.
No, it still works. It's fine.
Okay. No, it doesn't.
No, it's 100% fine. Mm-hmm. You don't even know how to speak English, Dan.
Thank you.
Obviously, this is tomfoolery and hijinks.
And we thank you for it.
Thank you, Ferdinand. Mm-hmm. Keep them coming. Honestly, quite sincerely, I feel strongly that I think it's fun to be corrected grammatically because English is a complicated language, mm-hmm. and we learn all throughout our lives.
Come see some pictures of me going to the thingy thing thing. See, there, me is what you say.
To the thingy thing thing.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
If you added a comma in there somewhere, you might be able to figure something out.
Right. But we didn't. So, Dan, thank you, Ferdinand. Now, Dan, you had a Twitter thing.
So I was complaining last week about like how Locke ended up.
I have that in my list here.
Yeah, when Locke was.
This
like,
is under the debate'em up section.
So yeah, so I
debate'em up.
What I was saying was that it didn't. Hold on a second. We have one of our members is dying over here. You okay?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
I was. Hope you're okay. Last week I was complaining that like I thought Locke sacrificed himself unnecessarily, that what he did didn't cause enough of a distraction, because if she can take out a bunch of guards, then what's one more Culber in that group? She already takes out like four guards simultaneously. What's one more person? He didn't need to do that. It was a waste of a distraction. And what
Sinisera
said that actually Locke did what he did to knock the shield down. Yes. So she could Maul could escape the shielded area. Now I didn't realize that. Okay. I didn't see that part.
And that was my understanding. So I think we just didn't have a conversation really about that, because I didn't realize that you didn't realize that that's why he did. Because I didn't have the problem with him coming up with a distraction. Mm-hmm. I thought what you were saying, Dan, was that it was very TV convenient.
I was saying that too.
It was all located right there to make it easy for him to do it.
A couple things, and that was one of the things.
Yeah. And again, that kind of came up in response to, us commenting that, you know, we're digging the season. And last week's episode, Erica, I thought was really great. It's just there are occasionally, especially when it comes to Locke and Maul, just like escaping from all these scenarios. Now we'll get to it this episode. I think this episode was different,
because
we were like getting to see a lot of actual Breen stuff, and so we see what's the mechanism.
But then on the Twitter, I was like, because you were saying like that you never didn't have a problem with that part where I did. And I was like, Mike, what I said on Twitter was like, Patrick, you never said anything last week about not having a problem with that part. So like I would have thought that if you disagreed with what I had said, you would say something during the podcast. But I didn't find out until the Twitter where you were like, oh, yeah, I didn't have a problem with that either. So to me, it seemed a little after the fact, because like You didn't mention that during the podcast that you did not agree with me.
I couldn't
about
tell
that
on
point.
The Twitter if you were having a problem with me or if you were having a problem with Sinisera.
No, I wasn't.
So I didn't respond.
No, I wasn't having a problem with Sinisera. I was having a problem with Patrick. Oh. You.
But in my tweet, I still didn't understand that you didn't understand when I wrote that tweet. Do you understand?
When you wrote that tweet, you said...
I was not aware at the time that you didn't realize that the distraction was to let Maul escape from the... From the force
okay,
field.
So you just okay, so okay, like because that was one of my arguments. You didn't realize I was making the second argument of that.
Did not realize that.
But
at
then,
all.
But then, what did you think then when you read Sinisera's comment saying like I want to correct Dan on what he said?
Well, he didn't say, or they didn't say I want to correct Dan.
Yeah, I think they said a nitpick.
They said also just to nitpick, Locke had to distract the doctor because he deactivated.
Oh, so I guess
shield.
In that comment, there's nothing that says it specifically was calling me out. Although I think it was.
I think it was just that we didn't mention that outright.
Wait, and
it makes sense that we didn't because I sort of assumed it and you didn't catch it, and then Jesse was over here.
Wait a second,
eating some candies.
No, I remember you did make it. You did make a point in here. You did make a point.
I said, yeah, I didn't have a problem with Locke's distraction attempt, though I agree with Dan. That it was TV convenient for him to be able to do this given the situation. But then again, Starfleet regularly lets time travelers and children wander onto the bridge. Smiley face with squinty eyes.
You said, yeah, I didn't have a problem with Locke's distracted attempt.
I just read the tweet.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Talk about, you know.
Oh, like, see, I thought you were calling me out. I thought you were saying, like, unlike Dan, I didn't have a problem with that.
That's not what I said.
Because one of the points I did make was that I didn't think there was a good reason for him to distract himself. Now that you're saying it was a shield, that makes more sense.
This is a miscommunication.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry if I came off... I was never disagreeing with Sinisera. I was like, okay, that they're probably right. And for you, Patrick, I'm sorry. Right. I took what you said the wrong way.
Well,
I'm just assuming you were calling me out on something. Yeah. I was assuming you were taking a shit in my face.
I was not taking a shit in your face in this particular instance.
All right. I'm glad we got that cleared up.
But there were a couple other things, you know, in our debate 'em up section. Open Pike was writing in about the Serenity prayers because you may recall that you and I got into a bit of a thing.
Yeah.
Where, and I, by the way, still confused.
it makes perfect sense.
About the number of Serenity prayers, which for me, I don't see any reason why it's unusual for them have five Serenity prayers because they have five magic towers.
No, but they were saying five things. What if there were two more things?
I know. By the way, we're not going to rehash the whole thing because we spent a lot of time on it last week. Go listen last week. But yes, you just keep saying, like, but what if? What if I had a giant fucking hole in my
like
head?
It's like if there's 12 steps, there's probably...
Don't mention the 12 steps.
Probably
you did that last week and it also didn't make
probably like 13 steps sometimes, but they cut one out because it's more convenient to fit into 12.
But Open Pike Night, Jesse, I believe, running that account, Jesse from Open Pike Night said, I agree with Dan.
Damn right.
That it felt coincidental that there were the same number of prayers as towers if the prayers existed before the towers, but agree with Patrick and Jesse if the prayers were written after the towers arrived. So Jesse's making the point that we don't have enough information to know when the prayers were written. If they were written after the towers, then obviously it makes sense to write five. And Jesse goes on to say, however, knowing the Denobians were likely observing the Helmnites before installing the towers, it's possible they chose to install five to better fit into the existing culture, assuming the five prayers already existed, thus adding an additional layer of masking to their interference. So thanks, Jesse.
For the Scion!
It doesn't necessarily clear anything up between Dan and I, but it is an example of how hilariously awesome Star Trek and Star Trek fans are.
And it shows that,
that we're getting all up in arms over, well, why five? This is Serenity Prayer number five.
And it shows, get it?
I did.
It's a con joke.
This is Serenity Prayer number five.
Get it?
I get it. Seti Alpha 5.
It's similar to, This is Seti Alpha 5.
For the Scion. All right.
I'm glad that he wrote that because I'm glad somebody understood what I was trying to say.
Yeah. Well, and then again, related and final debate 'em up is from Joy of Trek, the Joy of Trek podcast, yet another excellent podcast.
Egg salad.
And they said, oh no, I'm becoming one of those people who jumps on Twitter to argue with a podcast they're listening to. How terrible of me. And long story short, I'll summarize here, but Joy of Trek was just commenting because we were critiquing the quality of the clues a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think Joy of Trek did do a good job of, defending the clues, saying they're like a little bit cleverer than maybe we're giving them credit for. Mm-hmm. For example, the journal mentioned twin moons, not two moons, saying I gave birth to twins. Doesn't by definition mean you only birthed two children, just that two of them were linked by birth. And so while Kovich searched for two moon planets, Burnham searched for planets with two synchronous moons.
Yeah, but that just, all that does is widen the set of that you, the available set you can choose from. It makes it,
doesn't it narrow it?
It doesn't narrow it because now
there are fewer synchronous moons than just two.
Yeah, there are less synchronous moons.
There were fewer synchronous moons.
Less synchronous
moons.
What I was saying is now we're including the set of the ones where there's two moons, just two moons, and we're also including the set where there are two synchronous moons and then extra moons. So that's increasing the data set.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, because Burnham guessed, correctly as it happened, that in fact it's not two moons by itself is not a sufficient condition. It's two moons who also are linked by this period of orbit or whatever, synchronous orbit. That's the differentiation. So there's a set of all two moons. And then there's the set of all two moons, except, you know what?
I'm right.
Yes, you're right, but I want to articulate why, which you probably already articulated better than I'm going to articulate.
Damn.
But you're right because the planets could have more than two moons, mm-hmm. but two of them had to be synchronized. However, I still think probably there are fewer synchronized moons. Like if the assumption is that we have the maps of all the systems.
But they didn't, first of all, they didn't say they had to be synchronous moons.
No. Anyway, I don't know why I'm arguing this anyway, because although I respect where Joy of Trek is coming from, that clue actually wasn't the one I had a problem with. I did have more of a problem with the Beta Z one. And so this one, they were writing to us while listening to the podcast, because he says, and the Betazoids from the 24th century didn't encode the future location of the Eternal Library in their clue. Rather, they crafted an empathic connection between the index card and the library. Any empath in any century who held the card could sense the current location. Oops, the last thing actually comes up in the episode, because we did discuss that. Mm. I retract my comment in at least one of my pants, because he's been panting due to the ranting.
panting from the ranting.
We did mention it, but this is the thing where, okay, look, it's Star Trek, so we accept
this
a lot.
Rank.
The idea of getting an empathic connection off of something is already a very silly Star Trek thing. That's not like a hard sci-fi thing, but we're cool with it because it's like whatever. I do think it's like an extra jump to say, okay, this object has been imprinted with an empathetic, signal to not this object is still linked and is like transmitting the empathy over light years of space to update it.
And all because the book used the word feelings.
And also it's like, that's not, I'm not going to say that's never happened. Equivalent thing has never happened in Star Trek before, but I don't remember anything off the top of my head. And it's just, whereas we do have plenty of examples of somebody getting a vibe from an object, and that's not just Star Trek. That's an old school mythological animism type thing where you can imbue an object with some sort of spirit or signal of spirit. And Star Trek has simply taken that and run with it and converted it into the pseudoscientific
Betazoid. I would be able to buy that they figured that out after like stumbling on it, after trying to guess a million other things. I'm like, that would be one of the many things they would try. But the fact to get to there from the very beginning, I understand.
Or it should be the first thing they try because it's a Betazoid.
And I understand that we don't necessarily have time to go through all them failing each one, but there could have, I don't know. It's just like, it was just the way they were so certain of it.
Stamets made
a lot of jumps there.
And these are not like,
and it was all because book said feelings in a sentence. And he's like, wait a minute.
Hardcore critiques. These are little nitpicks where it's the kind of thing where if you could come up with a puzzle that was just like, I don't know, a little bit more engaging, it would be just ever so slightly more satisfying, because you're like, that's the answer, as opposed to, oh, okay, I couldn't have really have guessed that. Mm-hmm. That's cool, I guess. Not a big deal. Okay, and then one last thing before we get into the discussion of this week's episode. We do have a mystery solve-em-up.
We sure did.
Yes, we sure did. An audio mystery solve-em-up. So, As a quick reminder, last week, longtime listener and contributor Fraser submitted the following voicemail. So let's review that voicemail real quick.
Hi, beautiful nerds. It's Fraser. You guys rock. And I know we're about to hear a lot of this on the next episode.
Okay.
The way he says that, he goes, I know we'll hear a lot of this, and then I expect him to play the sound. Yeah, and then he doesn't. He goes, on the next episode. Yeah. Throws me off every time.
Yes. So.
Every time.
So.
Yes.
We couldn't figure out who said this.
Or what they were saying.
Or what it was saying. We thought it might be a Stamets. But we figured it out.
Who figured it out? Not me.
No. Okay. We didn't figure. Well, I'll tell you who figured it out.
We sure did.
Fraser figured it out. So Fraser wrote in to say.
Oh, he figured out what he was saying.
He said, "Hi guys, I had to rewatch episodes 4, 5, 6, and 7 to see if I could find where the fuck I heard that indecipherable phrase. I was sure it was episode 5, so I watched it 3 fucking times. No dice.
Damn.
Then I listened to your Mirrors episode and booyah bass. At time 44 minutes and 2 booyah seconds, bass. You'll hear it. 44 minutes and 2 seconds.
Booyah so, baseball.
I loaded up the old podcast, the Mirrors episode, and I found this. Maul's hole. That's me saying Maul's hole.
Maul's hole. Like Maul?
Like the character of Maul and
her
Locke.
And her hole?
Well, let's listen.
Or is it hole? Is he saying hole?
Maul's hole. I'm saying Maul's hole. But as I do not have a reputation as being a particularly misogynistic or objectifying person, one might say
Maul's
it's
soul.
Peculiar. It'd be a peculiar thing for Patrick on the podcast to be all like talking about Maul's hole.
Which hole were you talking about?
So let's listen to the full sentence. Presumably, Maul's hole thinking she can get rid of this bounty on their head by giving them the ultimate power. The ultimate power. So it was from that. Presumably, Maul's whole thinking is that she can get rid of this bounty on their head by giving them the ultimate power. All right. So.
Oh, she was saying Maul's whole thing. Whole as in W-H-O-L-E.
Exactly. W-H-O-L-E.
Okay.
No, nothing toward. Nothing blue.
No cavities.
It was isolated in such a way as to mislead.
Yes, but excellent. Thank you.
Well, you got us.
Thank you, Fraser, for both presenting us with that mystery, solving it, and then and helping us solve it. That's great.
And we thank you for it.
We do.
Yeah, that was you got us. You got us good.
Thank you.
That was when Book was crying.
Okay. All right. At long last, with a few minutes left before we got to take a break, it is time to discuss labyrinths.
I love when ships are so big they have rooms that can allow other ships to fly around inside of them. Like the very first scene, that whole room. Do you notice they kept slamming their thing down on the ground?
They were the Breen Uruk-hai.
Yeah, they were.
It had a little bit of that, Saruman kind of thing going on.
And they also had like a lot of the.
Oh, I thought you were gonna make. I thought you'd made a recording that was just gonna be a 10-hour loop.
They also had a lot of like I got a mask on facial expressions where they're not making facial expressions.
They're cocking their head.
So
all
that's
crazy.
The only way they can make they're facial wiggling. Expressions.
They're like, huh?
So that it gives you like a Darth
Conan O'Brien style.
So it gives you like a Darth Vader vibe. There was a lot of that going on. There was some Jedi Darth Vader Darth Maul kind of vibes going on. Like at the end when she did that kick on him and then took his staff thing and shot him with the rifle staff thing and like there was. I mean, I know that. Star Wars isn't the only place where they had like people in outfits fighting. Of course, it's very.
Wait. Are you, just to be clear, I'm not saying I'm not supporting you, Dan, but are you asserting here on the It's Got Star Trek podcast that Star Wars is not the only place where people? Would you say wear outfits and fight each other?
Yes, I am asserting that is not the only place.
All right, okay.
I'm just saying it. Just something about the vibe. Something about the vibe of their suits and like the background and like them spinning around and kicking with their future gun staff and something about it. It had a Star Wars-y vibe to me in that last scene, and then also like the facial expressions through head motions. It was pretty neat, you know.
The opening
that
scene.
That rule guy was out of control. That rule guy.
Yeah, rule doesn't rule.
Ah.
The opening scene I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I did too.
And I'm right there with you, Dan. I dig the giant ship that has all sorts of ships inside it. Because why not?
Yeah, and somehow...
Why the hell not?
Somehow the library had buildings that were even taller than I think the ship was.
The library seemed pretty big.
Like, I bet you those buildings were like 100 times bigger than our current skyscrapers. Can you... I was looking at that, I was
You know what, Dan? I'm not willing to take that bet because I'm right there with you.
Damn right. And as you look at that, you look at one portion of it and you're like, that's the size of like the biggest skyscraper in the world. And it's
in the world,
that one little sign. And there's like 100 of those. That's how big it was. There was probably like thousands of stories.
Speaking of stories, do you think that the library was meant to evoke isn't it the Neverending Story that has that crazy like temple thing? There's like that, I don't know, Temple of Forever.
It's been a while since I've seen that.
It's been a while.
All I remember, that song. I remember like the dog, of course, the flying dog, and then like the horrible scene with the horse, and then there was like that turtle thing, that rock turtle thing. Yeah. No, there's a rock guy and a turtle guy. The turtle guy.
The rock guy is separate from the turtle guy.
Yeah, the turtle guy sneezed. Yeah. I think. Yeah, and then I remember at the end it was getting a little nihilistic, and it was like...
Well, the last thing I'll say about the opening before we go to break is, and I don't know how to articulate this. I know Ferdinand said I was the articulate one, but I do not know how to articulate this. But watching that opening, and I do ask others...
Wait, what was mine again? I'm Ad Rock because I'm manic?
Because you have, like, energy.
Mm.
And you're manic.
Sabotage!
Sabotage! Okay, Dan, don't you have like a whole list of sabotage buttons?
Oh, right. A whole list.
Sabotage.
All right, well, at least one.
I wasn't even paying attention.
All right, what I was trying to say is the opening sequence, just that brief opening sequence zooming in on the brain, it was awesome. It was great. High production value. It felt very Canadian to me.
I don't even know what that means.
I think if you've watched Canadian television you were a child in the 1980s, early 90s.
If we were talking about comedy and you were like, that comedy felt Canadian, I would know what you meant. But in this instance, I do not know what you mean.
I don't know how to articulate this other than to say there was something about the vibe. There was something about the camera movement. There was something about the special effects and the stage design and the symmetry that evoked to me the feeling of watching a late 1980s Canadian sci-fi program.
What?
I don't know. I can't explain it.
Was that meant as a joke?
No, it wasn't. I mean it sincerely. But if for some reason, if you're listening at home and you don't understand what I'm saying, just go ahead and think I'm making a joke. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break, but don't worry, we'll be right back with more discussion of Labyrinths.
Hi, Captain.
Be right back. All right, so that means you're ready, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
You're ready, Jesse. All right, I'll push play, and then I'll bring us back, okay?
We're bringing
what
it back.
What if I want to bring it back?
Oh, you want to bring it back, Dan?
No, I don't.
And we're back.
Okay, hold on. I got to push the play button. Okay.
And we're back.
All right, Jesse says we're back.
Balls hole.
All right, what did you play, Dan?
Balls hole.
Because I played the sound effect at the same time as you. What did you play?
Balls hole.
Balls hole. Balls hole.
Balls hole.
So you like that one. I like this one.
Maul's hole.
Well, oh, never mind. I'm not gonna examine that one too deeply. Okay.
You swore Targoon.
So we're back and we are discussing Labyrinths.
Labyrinths.
Labyrinths. And I thought it didn't make sense.
Its mission is in a labyrinth of books. Yeah. Its mission is in a labyrinth of books.
Yeah.
Its mission is in a labyrinth of books. Yeah. Good. Its mission is in a labyrinth of books. Right. Great. Its mission is in a labyrinth of books.
Wow.
Its mission is in a labyrinth of books.
Indeed.
Its mission is in a labyrinth of books.
Hmm?
So, we do have a few facts. I have some facts. A fun-em-up.
Are they called facts. Fact-em-ups?
They're not called fact-em-ups. It's a fun-em-up that happens to focus on maze facts.
Hang on, everybody!
Or labyrinth facts. So, now, we'll start with the term maze. The term maze, according to kids...
It means corn.
kidsconnect.com/fun/maze.
It means corn.
They say the term maze...
Means corn.
...dates from the 13th century and comes from the Middle English word maze, denoting delirium or delusion. Whereas,
what?
Whereas the term labyrinth dates as far back as the 14th century. So maze is from the 13th century. Labyrinth dates as far back as the 14th century, deriving from the Latin labyrinthus and the Greek labyrinthos, or building with intricate passages.
Hmm.
Now, the only difference between the two, between a maze and a labyrinth, is that a maze refers to a complex branching multicursal puzzle. Multicursal.
There's multicursal.
With choices of path and direction, while a unicursal labyrinth has only a single path to the center. Now, let's get at that, because that's an important distinction between the definition of a labyrinth and a maze. And such that a labyrinth is a type of maze, but a maze is not necessarily a labyrinth.
Is it like a square is a type of rectangle, but a rectangle is not a type of square?
Sort of, yes, indeed. Because the deal with a labyrinth, traditionally, by proper definition, contrary, by the way, contrary to common perception, I believe, is that a labyrinth is, again, it's unicursal. There's no choices. So it is a long, winding, intricate path, but it's one path that always gets to the center.
Oh, it's a maze!
Or to the destination, right? So a labyrinth, you will, no matter what you do, as long as you keep moving forward, you're not going to, it's going to be long and winding, but you are going to get to the center. There's no choices to be made. The purpose of the labyrinth is both to lengthen the journey, but also sort of in a metaphysical sense to give you time to meditate and consider the intricacies of your path.
So you're saying in a maze, there's a chance you don't figure it out, but a labyrinth, you don't have to worry about that.
Yes, because a maze has choices. You always have different paths that you can take.
It's the mission.
And there's only, there may not be only one path, but there's basically not every path you go to. Some of them will be dead ends or lead you in the wrong direction.
Oh, it's a maze. Finishing the mission means getting out.
And I thought
getting out is how I find the clue.
It was useful to mention this particular maze slash labyrinth fact because depending on how it's conceptualized in this episode, it's a labyrinth of the mind, which is a bit on the nose, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Beta Zed.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Beta Zoid.
Labyrinths of the mind.
Labyrinths of the mind.
But if it's a labyrinth, then you could one way you could take that is that there was no way to lose, right?
Well, I mean, think of the movie Labyrinth. It wasn't that maze-like.
But the thing is, that it was more maze-like. I think there was a time limit.
They didn't seem to get lost.
Well, yeah, that's right, Jesse. There was a time limit. I guess the time limit, you know, is the added. It's like separate from the labyrinth. But yeah, a labyrinth, you get there no matter what.
Yeah, like in the movie. It wasn't that maze-like.
But in the movie, the labyrinth is in fact a maze.
No, because
she has to make choices along the way.
But either choice will get her closer to the end, regardless.
Do you think so?
That's what my take on it was.
I do remember the worm at the beginning of the labyrinth said that she should have gone the other way because it would have like gotten her straight to the thing. But she did get to it eventually.
You've passed. Path.
Yeah, I did like that. Can you play that again? Because I did enjoy that.
You've passed.
Yeah.
You've passed.
pretty great. All right, let's look at some other maze facts while we're at it. There's lots of mazes in cathedrals, you know, in the tiles. They do a lot of cathedral stuff, and there's mazes or Etruscan mazes, and all around the world, all cultures have come up with variations on mazes. Although
it's really more of an oubliette.
Oh, we'll get to the oubliette in just a second.
Oubliettes sound terrifying, by the way.
Oh, yes. No, they're terrible. We'll get to that in a second. Dude. But let me see one other thing. Labyrinths or unicursal?
The archive is not responsible for any damage, dismemberment, or death that may result in your failure to do so.
5th century BCE is the first recorded labyrinth in Egypt.
Just kidding.
Now, they predated that. They assuredly predated that. That's just the first time somebody wrote down about like an actual built labyrinth that people walk through.
Wasn't there like the Minoan?
Yes. And then the Greek, you know, the Minotaur with the whole labyrinth thing.
Hmm?
And there's the hedge mazes, which were built in the 16th century.
Yeah.
They started building those to entertain royalty.
And we sure
were,
did.
And those were mazes, not labyrinths. And scientists have been using mazes to study animal psychology since 1882.
Everything's here for a reason.
Now, before we get back to the discussion, I did want to ask both of you, gents, if either of you have been in an actual maze, in either a hedge maze or a corn maze.
I've never been in any kind of
corn maze.
I've never been in any kind of maze. I've done mazes on pencil and paper.
But you haven't been walking around.
We had an Apple II Plus, and we had this program that would generate mazes for you. You just gave it the dimensions and how a complexity level from 1 to 10, and you could print out mazes. And me and my brother would print out all these mazes, and then we'd never do them. But it was so cool. Like, you know, the dot matrix printer with the holes on the side that you have to tear off, you know?
I think I've been in a hedge maze at some point at some stately home.
Badlands.
With a nice garden. I've been in there.
I've been in a few hedge mazes. The hedge mazes I've been in haven't been the particularly confusing kind. They were the kind that are almost fake mazes.
It's easy to see around.
Does it count when you're in the laser tag arena, or is that more like a labyrinth?
I don't know.
Laser tag.
There are probably some maze aspects, because again, a maze, there's multiple choices to get to different places, whereas a labyrinth is a single unicursal path.
Why is it called a labyrinth then, if there's multiple paths, if there's only one path? Because that's winding?
That's the definition of a labyrinth.
Does it mean there's obstacles and shit along the way?
Not necessarily, but it is intended to be a spiritual, meditative journey.
I don't know if I believe this.
Well, look it up. I can look up
interestingly,
the facts.
Labyrinth, I kept looking at the word labyrinth, and it was like, this is not how it's spelled,
It's labyrinth.
It looks so weird.
It does look a little bit weird, but that's what it is, and a labyrinth is unicursal. All the
you keep
sources
saying
agree.
That word.
It's that's because all the sources say it is a unicursal as opposed to multicursal.
Where did you get your
mazes.
Definition from?
I got it from
labyrinths.com.
There's a billion places, but including a Mental Floss article, mentalfloss.com/article/70964/15-intricate-facts-about-mazes.
Okay, we get it.
And then there's also maze facts at kidsconnect with a K.
Okay.
.com/fun/maze.
How about Merriam-Webster as found through Google searching? It says, number one, there's two definitions.
For labyrinth?
Yes. Number one, it says, a place full of passageways and blind alleys so arranged as to make it difficult to find one way around, and then maze. Number two says something extremely complicated or twisting.
I disagree with the Merriam-Webster definition.
The second one is more along the lines of what you were saying, something extremely complicated or twisting.
It's, when you look up all the mythology
and the
etymology of the word, it all says the same thing.
The sentence they gave was the cockpit. The sentence they gave was the cockpit was a labyrinth of instruments and controls.
Yeah, I don't believe that. They're conflating labyrinth and maze, and I'm going to make it personal mission.
That's Merriam-Webster, dog.
Yeah, fuck Merriam-Webster. What does Oxford say? Anyway.
You swore Targoon.
I bet Oxford gets right. Anyway, that's enough for the maze facts.
Screw you.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Okay, you were playing that earlier. So for the podcast.
Playing what?
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Well, that's what she says.
Screw you.
You cut it off because she says I'm going someplace.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
All I wrote was screw you.
Yeah, she says screw you. I'm going. I forget. She was like, I'm going to go hang out over
she
here.
She goes, I'll find my own way out.
Yeah, screw you. I'll find my own way out. So that made me think of
Okay, earlier.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Before the podcast, I thought I kept hearing Cartman, but I couldn't tell because it was so faint, and it must have been coming through like a headset or something over there. But I was like, what the fuck is
screw
that?
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
I was like, is that fucking? I was like, is that Cartman? I can't fucking tell.
I'm sorry to have made you.
You know when you hear something
insane.
When you hear something that's not only faint, but it's from an odd direction because it's coming from like a headset or something, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's all good.
I'm just making sure you're listening to what I'm saying.
I know what you're talking about. Touching your nose.
I'm just making sure you're
tapping nose.
I'm just making sure you're listening to what I'm saying.
You tap your nose. I tap my nose. That's indicating that we're simpatico.
Do you understand what I'm saying when I say I heard something that wasn't just far away, but it sounded like it was coming from an odd direction? So it sounded like, you know, when you throw your voice, you know?
Yeah, Dan, I can say with full sincerity that I understand the words that are coming out of your mouth. What do you think of that, Jesse?
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, good. All right, so major points about this episode, since we are meant to discuss this.
Oh yeah, we're quite in there, and we haven't gotten into any.
We've discussed most of the episode, anyway. Sort of. We've hinted at it, but
I found this episode pretty enjoyable.
It was good.
It was good. Again, the clue stuff was a little bit abstract, but like I did enjoy it for the most part. I did enjoy this episode.
My critique about the clue thing is partly that, like, I really like this setup of the mindscape, right? The labyrinth mindscape, you know, all of that I thought was great. And I thought how Burnham worked through the issue with her imaginary program.
It's my mind.
book version. I really enjoyed that. However, I will say, I think it was pretty obvious from the beginning.
Like how she was going to figure it out?
Well, that she was, it was going to be like one of those, really, you got to learn about yourself kind of
deal. Yeah, it was just to thine own self be true or whatever.
It was so obvious that you're almost disappointed that Burnham didn't immediately figure out, like, oh, it's one of those things.
Well, what's funny is this is the first time that they didn't figure out the clue on the first try. Because she thought.
Although people will critique that point that you're making, although I agree with your point.
Okay,
people will say, well, they did this and the other thing, but really what you're saying is they very rapidly are like, oh, it's this.
Yeah, because they went through the whole ordeal with her. Like, first time she thought it was she thought she had to use the Dewey Decimal System to find, like, the history clue or whatever because of the Dominion War, and they wanted it found during a time of peace. And then she was wrong about that. And then she was like, then there was some weird shit about how she thought she was supposed to find her way out of the reading room because it was like the missions are the most important thing to her, therefore
it's because the program told her that the reason she picked that room was because it's the most important thing.
I know, that's what I'm trying to say. I'm in the middle of saying that.
That wasn't clear from the way you were.
I was in the middle of a sentence. Well, I was in the middle of a sentence. Okay. And I was, right. That's what I was.
Finish the sentence. Didn't sound like you were going there.
Well, I mean, maybe you can sit and wait and stop trying to guess what I'm going to say before I say it.
The guessing is the fun part.
It's
fun for me. All right, what were you saying?
Okay, so Avatar book says a virtual space created from what your neural activity indicates is the most important place in your life. Okay, and so she's like, this is the most important place in my life because the mission's here, and when I'm on a mission, that's my priority. Which is a little bit misleading because Avatar book was saying it's the most important place of your life, period. Not what she was saying, which was the most important place in my life right now.
You know what's hilarious about this?
There's a difference between those two statements.
Yeah, so what's hilarious is that if this were Star Trek in the 60s or the 90s or whatever, then the excuse would have been that, oh, well, they need to reuse the same sets to save money. But this is like a crazy intricate digital set. I don't think they were saving any money by picking this location. Maybe a little bit. But you know what I'm saying? Back in the TNG days, it's like, oh, we're hanging out in 10 Forward in my mind room because I like 10 Forward. And it's like, no, it's because you've got a set that's 10 Forward. But it's just funny that this is a massively complex, beautifully articulated set. And it's like, but that's not the reason they're doing it, right?
Right, right. So, anyway, what I was just saying was that Book was saying it's the most important place in your life, and she was saying, well, I'm on the mission, therefore, she's saying, like, whenever I'm on a mission, that's the most important place
in my
life.
But he
was saying something different. He was saying the most absolute important place in your life, and you can't say it's the most important place in her life right now, but it's probably not the most important place in her life ever, which is what Book was saying. Maybe, they were saying two separate things.
I interpret it the way I think they meant straight away. I was fine with that. What I was less fine with, and again, this is a nitpick, but isn't this the same or a very similar lesson to what she learned in that mirrors episode? Because remember, the mirrors are going through the time, and then she had to, like, kind of, you know, she had to, like, talk to herself, and I know it's not identical, but I think it feels kind of similar. That she's having another life lesson.
Are you talking about? You're talking about mirrors. Okay.
Yeah, Burnham. Like in mirrors, both Burnham and Rayner had to sort of like learn a little bit. Burnham had to, like, argue with her past self and use what she'd learned in order to try to convince her past self to let them do that. You remember that whole business? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm not trying to say this is the same thing. They're not retreading. Well, maybe they're retreading a little bit. They're not. It's not a copy of that, but I don't know. Felt similar. It was like a different way of getting at the same thing. And again, since the solution was to find something out about yourself, and since she knew it was a Betazoid doctor who had put this thing together, and I don't know. Once I understood the basic plot, I felt like we were waiting a long time for that end scene.
Right.
That was very well done end scene. Well, it was just. It was very predictable.
Right. So anyways, so first she thought it was the history section. Then she thought it was the maze through the labyrinth because the mission is the most important place to her. And they were reading a book called Labyrinth of the Mind. And they're in a library, which is a labyrinth of books. And a labyrinth is she says labyrinth is another word for maze. She says that
and she's incorrect.
And then so the mission is to find her way through the maze back to the reading room. Yeah. She was wrong. And then her test started to become like her trying to figure out what the fucking test was. And then finally it was like all she had to do was be honest with herself, which is fine. But I mean, how was she supposed to know that that's where she was supposed to get to?
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Yeah, it's like, it doesn't all piece together.
Like it's one thing to if you're like lying to yourself and you realize you have to finally be honest with yourself. Yeah. But there was nothing to indicate that she was not being honest. I mean, I guess you could say from the past she was having trouble like reconciling herself with book.
Yeah.
But like that wasn't like how would that relate to a test which they said was meant? He was even like, "How do you know you're the good guy?" Meaning like this test is meant for everybody. Yeah. Like how would this test have known that this person wasn't being honest with themselves? And all the test demanded was that they were honest with themselves, but it didn't like put them in a situation that made them. That forced them to have to be honest with themselves. I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't sure how she was supposed to get there.
It was fine. It just wasn't. It was fine. It was like I said, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I think it was just undercut a little bit by that. I guess it kind of being like, okay, I guess she's gonna learn something. What's she gonna learn? Oh, it's because she has a fear of failure. Well, we know that. This is something she's mentioned before that she has a greater fear of failure than a fear of death.
You don't have to. Prove that you deserve this uniform, and this rank.
I know, it's pretty awesome.
This rank.
And I think that's part, you know, some of it is like, I thought she's kind of worked through some of this stuff already. And yeah, it's late series. She's resolved a lot of her issues as she's been growing. And so, you know, they're still trying to connect it to something along those lines. And it's fine. Like I said, it's fine. Just stuck out a little bit.
In the only real clash she had with Book at the beginning of this episode was when first of all, then they were like, you got to go to Book. And you could tell she was like, it's a little weird between us. And then he was implying that he was a little upset with her for getting Maul, not keeping Maul on the ship.
That's where I have a bigger critique his whole Maul thing. I still don't buy it.
So first of all, she in the episode where they were taking Maul, she defended Maul at the beginning and at the end. Yeah. It wasn't her that like gave up Maul. It was like... the other like Trina and others
Trina,
even at the very end she was like no we shouldn't do this but then she even says but I supported it she's like she's saying she supported getting rid of Maul when the episode didn't show that actually happening it just showed her being like no this is fucked up
she said it was fucked up she didn't say she disagreed with it at the end like Book says because I watched that episode again and
I watched you watch it
and Book is all like this is wrong and she's just kind of gives him a look like yeah, it's fucked up, but like, what are you gonna do?
But doesn't she protest a bit? Like,
initially, but then when Tarina like works through the logic, it's everyone agrees except for Book. And again, it's a nitpick, but they've tried to push this whole Book has a special relationship with Maul, a person he never met. Mm-hmm. And I understand that they've told us through exposition. They're like, it's because it's the daughter of the person who's his mentor. And so since he has no other family, he feels a connection to her and he wants to help her out as a favor to his past mentors. Like I get all of that. I'm just not feeling it through the screen. It's just, they're just telling me the Book isn't. And then so Book is, it has this conflict with Burnham, this additional conflict, which, by the way, you didn't need it because they already had conflict to begin with because of what happened last season that they could have resolved over time through the season.
And on Book's end, let's say that, like, that aside, that whole thing of like trying to buy into him, like having this connection with Maul. Let's say he did have we did feel a strong connection with him. Even so, like, what did he expect? I mean, he kept trying to help Maul, and Maul kept betraying Discovery.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah,
you know. So what? Like, so what if she's the closest thing he has to family? She was like, she kept like showing time and time again that she didn't give a fuck about Discovery. So it's like, what are they gonna do?
And they were under extreme threat by a big giant monster ship.
Yeah,
by a big scary monster ship.
I still wasn't big monster ship. I still wasn't clear though why they tried to protect her at first, and then at the end they decided to go the other way.
Well, because, again, this comes back to the whole thing that is also confusing and goes related to the whole clue thing is that they were afraid that Maul would be able
hell
to give
of a
them
place to hide a clue.
Yeah, that Maul would be able to give them information, give the Breen information to find further clues and or the progenitor's technology. And I'm confused right. by that because Maul lacks, that was the, that, she lacks most of the clues. Right. She doesn't have the physical things.
She told Rune in this episode.
He's got to go to Discovery to get
she
the
said
shit.
She, yeah, she says she doesn't have all the clues. Or
But that was their justification last episode, is that they didn't want to give up Maul and Locke because they feared that Maul and Locke would be able to, in a meaningful way, help the Breen get ahead, not only get the technology, but get at it before Starfleet, even though Starfleet has all the advantages in terms of the actual number of ships and the knowledge and the actual clues in hand. So I don't know. I'm still finding that a little confusing. I'm putting that into the category of no big deal. It's just plot machinations to get to the story. And the story has been interesting, letting us pop around to these kind of cool places. This library, the Eternal Archive, is another fun, cool bit of lore that's been added to the Star Trek universe. And of course, we got introduced to the amazing Ryel. Is that
Hyrel? Wait, before we move on, you were talking about how people, when I was talking about how I liked that, I didn't like or dislike, but I noticed that this was the first episode where they didn't get it quite,
yes,
the clue right away. You said that there's some people would contest. Well, I guess you were saying that in the other ones, you were saying that they did.
Yeah, I'm not talking about people specifically contesting you, but on the discussions on the internet, some people are more on your side of things, where it's like the solving of the clues is like, they're pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. Other people would point out, actually, no, they had this whole conversation. They had to narrow things down. And then Stamets had to talk to Book, and then Book had to do this with the empathy and stuff. So in those cases, they're not getting it on. Because you said, I was just only pointing out, because you said they're getting on the first try. Yeah, they're not getting it on the first try, but it is kind of, they're doing the Star Trek talk. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like when they do the Star Trek back and forth, clever people talking, and they work through the problem and very swiftly come to a solution. However, they are kind of like artificially stretching it out a little bit because they need, they need it to kind of last the episode before at the end Stamets can be like, aha!
On
Adira or Tilly or Reno or whoever.
On an aside, when they're finding these clues, there's a lot of this stuff where somebody hides, because they all lived like hundreds of years ago, they're hiding this like item, this relic or something in this place. And I just kept thinking, like, for example, in this one where there was the thing inside the jar or whatever, the crystal jar thing. Like, this,
what if somebody found it?
Yeah, what if somebody found it? Like, that happened in Janal. They looked like he found some shit in a rock. I can't tell where exactly he found it, but it happened in that.
It was just like in a nook in a rock,
right
near some monsters.
And then, when they found the Whistlespeak, when Burnham found the console hidden behind the rock. Like, first of all, the rock was marked with a discoloration of moss.
Yes,
you'd think somebody at some point would be like, "What's going on here?" And the way she opened the rock, she didn't do some complicated set of maneuvers. She touched it with both hands. And the console opened up. You'd think that somewhere in the hundreds of years it was around, it would open.
Implausible, but
I mean, it's not something.
It's Star Trek. Plausible.
It's not something that I'm going to nitpick too hard. It's just kind of. I just can't help but think, like, what if somebody found it? Like, how can they be so sure no one would have found it? But I'm able to live with it. I'm just sort of like.
I'm glad.
We're
all glad. Jesse, are you glad that Dan's able to live with it?
Yeah, man.
It's not a criticism.
It's always good to hear that.
It's not a criticism. More just a curiosity. Yeah. Not a criticism, just a curiosity.
Hyrel is an Ephrosian, Ephrosian librarian.
Star Trek 4 and 6?
Star Trek 6 for sure.
I think it was Star Trek 4 too.
I think the only Ephrosian we've really seen has been the Federation president in Star Trek 6, played by Kurtwood Smith. There's got to be other Ephrosians. It may be Star Trek 4, but I'm not remembering it. I think Star Trek 6 is what introduced this particular group of people.
No,
but I could be wrong. I just don't have a recollection of Star Trek. Star Trek 4 has so many aliens that I totally buy it if they're in there. The first time I heard them mentioned was Star Trek 6.
I think I actually read somewhere that it's on Star Trek 4.
All right. Well, we'll leave it up to the audience to figure that out. But Hyrel is a fun character.
Labyrinths of the Mind.
I really enjoyed her character.
Fun to have a book. Visit me in the library for a change.
Oh, and what was cool about that was she asks Book, she's like, "Is that really your name?" And Book just kind of sheepishly, but he's like, "Yeah, that's my name." And
don't wear it out.
Well, the thing is we know that that's not Book's original name, but it is the identity. It is the name he's taken for himself. It is the identity he's taken for himself thoroughly. And I think that really matches up with Discovery's sort of overall philosophy and ethos of accepting people for the identities that they choose for themselves rather than the identities that are pushed on them because of legal or traditional reasons, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's what the writers were trying to do here, but that's the kind of thing that jumped out at me, is that nobody called it. I was like, oh, your name's not Book. It was, yeah, my that's his name. That's the name he picked. And then, of course, cute joke, cute librarian joke.
But first, there's a little speech we like to give.
Yeah.
And we thank you for it.
I like to give.
Just kidding. Please follow my instructions precisely and do not deviate. The archive is not responsible for any damage, dismemberment, or death that may result in your failure to do so.
So I'm curious why they hid this thing in the Badlands. I guess it was a form of protection, I guess, to keep people from
fucking
it up.
Although seemingly people can show up and check out stuff, but I guess you have to know, you have to have a card, I guess.
And not
you have to have a library, you have to be a participant.
And not only that, you need to have like a serious starship that it's not going to, because their shields went down to 25% trying to just get there, so you need a starship.
And they said they were hiding out there for about 100 years, I guess. So I guess they don't move all that often.
What do you think archivists do in their free time? You think they play video games?
No, they archive stuff.
They've got to do others. They should digitize all that shit.
That's partly what they do. That's one of their jobs.
Probably not a lot of free time.
But you also have to correct mistakes and edit stuff and analyze it and compare it. And then you have to figure out how to categorize it.
Do you think they play that Atari Blasters game that Book was playing in the last episode? Remember that he was playing? Because that Atari Blasters game, because the holodeck wasn't realistic enough, so he played Atari Blasters?
I thought he was playing like a Virtual Boy. Remember that?
Yeah, right. The holodeck, they never get the ship right, but he's like playing on the ship, but he's got these little wireframe animations. I thought it was cool. I liked looking at that game he was playing. It was funny.
I don't know what archivists do when they're not archiving, but I do know that library science and archival science is fairly heavy duty science behind that, right?
Hey, Jesse, duty or no duty? What did Patrick just do?
Duty.
Hey, you got it. Patrick just dutied. According to stexpanded.fandom.com, Frosian's made appearance in Star Trek 4, Star Trek 6. Then there's some fan-made productions, Tales of the Seventh Fleet and Star Trek Operation Beta Shield.
All right. I don't 100% buy that Star Trek 4.
I've read it in two separate websites.
Because my understanding has always been that they were first introduced to Star Trek 6. But, like I said, I buy it if I am incorrect about that.
The president is a representation of the alien Starfleet officer from Star Trek 4, a Frosian Federation president. It's the Federation president.
In Star Trek 6, it's the Federation president. In Star Trek 4, it's not.
And
in
everywhere
Star Trek 4,
I look,
maybe there's somebody else.
On Pinterest, it says Efrosians 4 and 6.
I don't. What does Memory Alpha say? Look up Efrosian on Memory Alpha.
Okay. I guarantee you I will be right. And you will be wrong.
You look that up. And in the meantime, we will take a very quick break. And when we return, we will find out conclusively when Efrosians were first introduced. And then we will conclude our discussion of labyrinths. Be right back. All right, we're back. Welcome back to the It's Got Star Trek
podcast. Your request is denied.
Our request to come back is affirmed.
Oh, man.
It's not denied. It's affirmed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What did you find, Dan, on Memory Alpha? We'll go with Memory Alpha.
Okay, it says Efrosians had cranial ridges, blue eyes, and white hair, and then parentheses says Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Okay.
And then also it says Efrosian men were generally seen wearing long hair and flowing mustaches, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
I'll take that. But I buy that if they were first introduced there. It's news to me, but I buy that.
Mm-hmm.
If Memory Alpha says it, it's not 100%, but it's 98%.
And we thank you for it.
Yes, indeed. All right. Labyrinth of the Mind, we did mention that is very on the nose.
Oh, when they put the key together, this sound?
Yeah.
In closed captioning, it said zapping.
Well, I mean, I guess that's not incorrect.
That was zapping.
But yeah, you mentioned, Dan, the Discovery having to be fairly robust to fly through the Badlands. I really like that sequence of them going through the Badlands. It was very standard on the one sense, but it was so artfully done. And frankly, I enjoyed seeing a standard, we're shaking back and forth and oh no, what's going to happen? Oh, the shields and everyone talking. Mm-hmm. I really like seeing that, right? It's that whole competency porn thing, mm-hmm. competency fetish that a lot of people that are into Star Trek are into that aspect mm-hmm. of it. I'm into that aspect of it. And we got to see some of that here. And of course, it was cool when they busted into that little oasis area, which mm-hmm. was conveniently a different color.
Yeah. Conveniently.
So
that's how they knew they were there.
And so the audience could tell the difference. Because yeah. this, again, another in a string of really well-directed episodes where the geography of the episode was very clear, even though it was all about mazes and or labyrinths.
you would say or labyrinth.
Both outside.
He was saying labyrinth.
Both flying around outside and inside. It was always very clear where the ships were in relative to each other and where the people were and what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I praise the direction for doing such a good job with that.
We also got to see Reese makes a pretty kick-ass captain.
Oh yeah, I have that in my notes. Yeah. I was like Lieutenant Commander Reese is an excellent commander.
I'd see a spin-off with Reese as captain.
I was thinking exactly that. I want a spin-off that's
Star Trek Bridge Bros.
I was like, Jesse's starting to wake up. He hasn't talked. Jesse's been totally unengaged. Now he's all now he's super engaged. Yeah, but I would watch a show with Reese as captain mm-hmm. and maybe Jet Reno as as chief engineer.
So
Chief O'Brien.
So
apropos of nothing.
So I guess in absence of
absinthe. Oh, did you say absinthe?
No. In absence of Wosakoon and Detmer, they have Asha and Gallo.
Yeah, and Lieutenant Gallo's great. Asha's great. They're really, both of them are really great.
It's just bizarre.
It's a little sad because you're like, I want my people.
Yeah.
Wosakoon and they're on and Detmer, they're on the ISS Enterprise, slowly flying at home.
Yeah, why did they transfer them? Like, what was the in-show reasoning? Like, why are we supposed
The in-show reasoning is that they took charge of flying the ISS Enterprise back to Federation headquarters.
There's some kind of behind-the-scenes reasoning.
I guess they may be difficult to schedule the actors. Maybe
they started asking for too much money.
Like, Doug Jones was working on a movie or something.
Yeah, he was doing stuff, mm-hmm. so who knows? And, you know, frankly, it's more realistic to have different crew members and stuff, but I miss our people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that being said, Lieutenant Gallo and who's the other?
Asha.
Is it Lieutenant Asha?
I don't know.
Ensign Asha? Lieutenant. Regardless, both great characters. I think they're both doing a great job.
Lieutenant Commander Asha.
Ah, great. A lot of Lieutenant Commanders.
Lieutenant Commander Reese.
Yes. Yeah, they all got promotions.
Commander Lorna Jemison. Linus is a Lieutenant Junior. Wait, JG? What's JG?
Junior grade.
Yeah. I knew that.
Yeah, JG Herschler. It's been good seeing more of the Breen perspective. So all the stuff with Maul, I really like the character. I'm not hating on the character. I was not a fan of seeing the character for 2 minutes at a time and magically escaping from all these things. And
right.
I don't know. If you're going to be like a, what do you call it, a Bonnie and Clyde, you got to buy into it a little bit, but I don't know. That's where I've had issues. The more we get screen time, like last week we talked about how the scene between Maul and Locke as Locke is dying was great. And it was really impactful. You believed it. You believed they cared for each other.
I still hold that like we didn't get to know him well enough for it to be truly as impactful as it should have been.
I 100% agree with that point that you made last week. That yes, it's a shame that you start feeling that right as Locke dies. Of course, who knows? We'll see what happens, you know, in the next couple episodes. But here again, in this episode, it didn't feel like Maul was performing some crazy magic. She was manipulating the situation in a way that I thought I bought it because mm-hmm. Rule was being such a piece of shit.
Man, he was out of control.
And now you could argue that it's kind of, you know, well, her plan only works because he was so maniacal and like over the top.
Yeah.
But we don't know. We don't know anything about really that much about Breen. It's totally plausible that this guy's a complete asshole. Well,
when he got the all of the Breen banned from the library, I was like,
yeah.
I was like, there's six Primarchs. Like, that's not fair to ban all of the Breen based upon these one assholes. Gosh. But then later on, Maul made a good point.
It's librarians. It's not fair.
Maul made a good point saying, like, you know, you probably pissed off. You're like, when other Breen find out about this, they're going to come after you.
Maul was taking advantage of the errors he was making and doing so in a plausible fashion. So even when she kills him at the end and they decide not to kill her, she had already done all the work to earn that win, in that she clearly was positioned with Locke, and she saw that the Breen around her were like super into Locke, and that they were like all about helping him out and helping out his cause. And she was able to turn things in her direction because of understanding that situation. Well, and I bought it. And I bought into this storyline. It all made sense to me.
And Maul, the character of Maul is starting to become like a little more interesting because she now seems she's a bit sympathetic as a character.
Yeah.
She's also like criticizing Roon on his lack of honor. So you can see she's got rules, and
though she's doing it to manipulate, you believe that she actually is like pissed off at him.
Yeah.
She's mad if he blows up the archive.
No, I don't think she's strictly manipulating him when she says that. I think she actually believes that she's like...
Both things can be true. She's manipulating and she thinks he's an asshole.
Right. So she's interesting because you kind of like root for her in this one sense. But then it's easy to forget, though, that the next time she comes up to Discovery, she'll fuck him over, which is pretty interesting because she's sympathetic and she has some sense of honor, but she's still going to get Discovery, which makes me think that either that there's a good possibility that this sort of indicates a transition, maybe, and she'll end up backing off in the end and joining Discovery in the end, or like not joining, but you know what I'm saying? Like maybe it'll turn out that she like starts to be like, okay, Discovery,
it
you're
should
right.
Be, it
do
should
you think
be
it's going to be like it could? Do you think it's going to finally be like Book is like convinces her not to be? Like the fact that she's becoming sort of like a better person, it seems like she's slowly becoming a better person, even though when the tires hit the turbine, is that how the phrase goes?
What's the phrase, Jesse, from the Patreon episode about with the pickles? Well, that's the way the pickles,
that's the way the pickle squirts.
That's the way the pickle squirts.
So anyway, and
stay tuned to our Patreon, and that statement will be clarified.
So it seems like she's becoming a better person, even though when she has to like face Discovery, you discover that she's still way against them. It makes me think, though, that she'll probably in the end make some reconciliation with Discovery at some point, or maybe she won't, and when she dies it'll be, I hope she doesn't.
I don't know how they're going to end this. I do expect it's going to be a Star Trek style ending. It's not going to be that she's an evil person and goes down in flames.
And she's, because she's already showing that she's not evil.
It could, I don't know. They could do, look, one of the stereotypical sort of tropey things they could do is that she tries to bring Locke back to life using the progenitor tech.
And then, she,
and then
for
it turns
some
out
reason,
he's a zombie or a monster or he's an asshole.
Or he comes back and says, let me go or something.
He's
like,
oh, yeah, no, this is terrible, horrible. Or he comes back and he's like, hell is real. I don't want to die.
I think they'll have a really romantic moment where he'll be like, it's okay to let me go, and she'll be crying, and he'll be smiling because he'll just be like, it's okay, everything's beautiful now, it's okay to move on.
I'm all liquidy.
I'm all liquidy.
I'm all gloopy.
I'm all gloopy doopies. What is it? He said.
Yeah. Did he say something?
He said something.
You seem to think he said something, and you're furiously wrestling with your.
There's more of that down here, you gelatinous asshole.
Gelatinous assholes.
Indeed.
That's kind of fucked up. That's fucked up. He called them gelatinous assholes. And it's also fucked up. Like near the end, Burnham was like, someone to Rainer, she's like, someone once told me never to turn your back on the Breen.
Yeah.
Those are two fucked up statements, I think, in that episode. Not really, but it's kind of like, it's because, well, because
they killed his family.
It's not very nice to call them gelatinous assholes. That's kind of a slur. And then to be like, never turn your back on the Breen. That's like when Quark got all offended when Harry Kim was like, we learned about you Ferengi. But Quark wasn't actually offended, but he was trying to be like, this is an offensive thing to say. Not, even though he was fucking with them, he was like trying to point out that that's a legitimate thing to be offended by.
Not to take things too literally, but I don't think a gelatinous asshole would sort of structurally really would work.
Yeah.
It's not really an asshole.
I'm taking things a little literally.
It would be more through osmosis at that point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway. Not to derail the conversation.
What do you think happened to the archive at the end? Like, did it get fucked up? A bunch of book spots got fucked up.
A little bit. I was a little one thing I was a little disappointed in was that I was hoping that it would turn out the archive, because remember at one point Hyrell is all like, I'm going to go prepare our defenses. I thought that it was like, I was going to expect the archive to bust out with some like crazy shit.
I was expecting that too. I was like,
and maybe that would help resolve
the situation.
I was like,
let's just wait. There's going to be something in the
But, you know, yeah. That's why they hide, I guess. Is that
it's really more of an oubliette.
They had an oubliette.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of oubliette, right?
I mean, that's pretty.
You know what an oubliette is?
Yeah. The brain.
An oubliette.
Well,
from
it means like forgotten. Or
from the
forget.
French oubliette.
I know what an oubliette is, yeah.
Which means to forget. It's also known as a bottle dungeon.
Yeah.
Usually a basement room, which is accessible only from a hatch or hole
in
a high ceiling. And one term for this hole that leads to an oubliette. So the oubliette is French. And there's a German term from the hole. It's called an Angstloch. An angst is like fear.
Oh, man.
A fear hole.
Some things I've read say that they're small enough that you have to crouch the whole time while you're in there.
Yeah, I've heard that too, yeah.
Yeah, they can be. I've seen them. If you go to Europe, maybe other places as well, but certainly in England and mainland Europe, and a lot of the castles will have an oubliette, and it's just a trap door. It's like a door. It looks like a where you throw trash down.
That's such a bummer. That's,
it usually I, doubles as that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they would often put trash down there as well, and so you
it's just a crazy idea.
Trash in a castle is also
Europeans came up with a bunch of crazy ideas.
It's a bummer that they had to like shoot lasers in the library, because you know hopefully they had their
I like to shoot lasers in the library, don't you? It's always fun.
Hopefully they had their phasers set to kill people but leave inanimate objects unscathed, like in the several other series. Like there's been more than once
they've heard a book
where they hit like a statue and it just kind of like does nothing, but then you shoot someone and it all fucks them up.
Right. Now, well, a book did get hit.
Bunch of shit.
He's making a pun. Oh. It's one of them classic Jesse puns.
Oh man.
His book got hit. He got an abdominal wound.
Right. Right. He did.
Dan's furiously rushing to click a sound. What's it gonna be? I don't even know what it's gonna be. I'm excited.
You already said furious once.
Furious?
Have fun to have a book. Visit me in the library for a change.
Okay, so
I was also going to say I enjoyed the GoldenEye cam of Book taking out a Breen soldier.
It
looked like a first person shooter.
That was fine.
But like, no, seriously though, like I want to know I'm still thinking about how much that library got fucked up. Okay,
I don't think that much.
And I'm thinking about how many injuries there had, and when they
said a lot of people got injured.
And then when Raynor, when they went through the Badlands to get to the library, he was like no significant injuries, which implies that there were some injuries.
Yeah,
and
some
I want to know
some bruises.
They got
some
a bunch of old Band-Aids.
Do you think they got some broken bones in there? Because in the future, it's not a big deal when you
not
got
a big deal to get a broken.
But that hurts though.
Like somebody stubbed their toe.
No, I think they broke their bone.
I want to clip that. I want to clip that out. Forget.
Broke their bone.
Forget about Maul's hole. Forget about Maul's
hole.
Nope.
They broke their bone.
Broke their bone.
No need.
Okay. Another thing I wanted to highlight last week.
Last week.
We had an excellent.
Let's fly.
There was an excellent adventure music cue.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Played that excellent adventure
they
music.
They played some good music when we were.
This week.
When they were scrolling down from the library.
This week.
The library walls.
This week, Dan.
When they were going. When they saw the inside of the library.
This is the guy who's always like, let me finish my sentence, Patrick. Let me finish my sentence.
No.
Yes, Dan.
You can't call me out on that like
I am indeed calling you out.
You can't do that.
Because last week we had adventure music. This week we have a great wonder of knowledge music cue.
I'm just letting you
which
know.
I'm
just trying to let you know how it feels.
Okay, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I just want you to know so you'll understand and be more empathetic, and so you'll do it less in the future.
Well, we'll see how that worked out for you after we listen to this wonder of knowledge music cue.
Exactly.
Is it me? The mission.
It's very like.
And down that aisle, you'll find our extensive collection of original Valoric manuscripts.
Four, five,
we can take a detour if you like.
No, thank you. We're pressed for time.
We are pressed.
Holy
for
shit.
Time.
Yeah,
Maul's hole.
That was the exact spot I was thinking where you see the inside of the library where there's a super wide-angled lens. So
very wide angle.
You could see like the pillars looked all curved inwards.
All slurpy, it was even an artificial wide-angle lens because that was all digitally created.
Yeah,
too,
right, exactly.
Which I thought was kind of amusing to think like not only is it a hilarious wide-angle lens, it's an artificial simulated
Well, it's like when they do artificial shaky cam too. It's just a button they press. I thought the library was really cool.
Yes.
It wasn't exactly what you'd call cozy, but it was pretty awesome.
It was a rad library.
That was a big old table they had. So when she was all going through the maze,
the labyrinth,
the labyrinth, was it a maze or a labyrinth?
That's why I brought it up. I think it is an open question. We might leave that to our listeners. Well, write in at It's Got Star Trek. No, right. Feedback okay. at itsgotstartrek.com with the subject line, well, labyrinth or maze.
She brought up the subject of Tremau's algorithm, which is an efficient method to find the way out of a maze.
Okay.
And so she used that algorithm.
It turned out that was wrong. Remember, that didn't actually solve her problem.
Yeah, but that's not what we're discussing. We're discussing whether it was a maze or a labyrinth.
It wasn't a maze because her using the maze algorithm did not, in fact, let her solve.
But she found her way through.
Yes, but I think we have to think in the more metaphorical
And she got it from the
labyrinths of the mind.
Maybe it's a case of them misusing the term. Maybe it's a case of the labyrinth is the metaphorical labyrinth, and the maze is meant to obfuscate and confuse.
So here are the rules of this algorithm. It says, when you're at a junction, use the first applicable rule below to pick an entrance to exit through. This is all from Wikipedia.
Okay.
If only the entrance you just came from is marked, pick an arbitrary unmarked entrance, if any. This rule also applies if you're just starting in the middle of a maze and there are no marked entrances at all. Okay? So you pick an arbitrary one. The rule number two is, pick the entrance you just came from unless it is marked twice. This rule will apply whenever you reach a dead end. And the third rule is, pick any entrance with the fewest marks. Zero, if possible, else one. That's the... You know the algorithm I use when I play like Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom? I just go right.
In the Maze Facts, in one of those Maze Facts websites, they said that because most mazes are bounded,
yeah,
and most of the walls are in one way or another attached to the external wall, that always going right
when you as soon as you
just,
can,
and in fact just keeping your hands on the wall, yeah, and just snaking around right is the most efficient
but
way.
If there's so-called little like islands where they're not connected to one another, that's not going to work. You just go in circles. Like by islands, I mean like disconnected portions of the maze.
Yeah.
Like you had a wall and like you had a section that wasn't connected to the wall. That was just on its own. That can fuck you up.
It would reduce the efficiency, but it probably would still be an efficient way to do things. Because
if there were sections of the maze that you were in that weren't connected to like
anything,
but they were still in the middle of the maze, you would just go in circles. But most mazes, it's pretty reliable that
Do you have a recording of Rael say, or of High? Do you have a recording of Hyrel saying, "May you gain knowledge elsewhere"?
No,
because it's like an awesome way to say "fuck you" to somebody.
No, but you're right. That
may
is
you gain
awesome.
Knowledge elsewhere.
Yeah, that was.
That's like a good nerdy way to say, like, "Get the fuck out of here, you piece of shit."
Yeah, fucked up the whole.
That was
fucking
awesome.
The whole species is now banned.
The whole thing it's gone crazy.
I like when they used the tunnel channeling technology or whatever.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was cool.
The brain got some cool shit going down.
Okay, so this beam that looked about as thick as a building is tall, by the way.
Yeah.
That was a thick beam. That was probably bigger than a fucking...
You're using a lot of building analogies.
I know.
Today,
all I keep thinking about is buildings, because buildings are big. Buildings are like the biggest things we have.
Well, it depends on the building.
Well, depends I know, but it's the biggest possible thing we could have.
What about a mountain?
What about aircraft carrier?
No, but man-made or human-made.
Ah, human-made.
Human-made.
What about an aircraft carrier?
Buildings are bigger.
Well, I guess it depends on the building. My house is not bigger than
it has the potential to be bigger. It has the potential to be bigger.
All right.
The spruce moose or whatever that's.
The spruce goose.
Whatever.
The spruce goose.
Spruce. It was made out of balsa wood or whatever. So when I saw that beam, also they had a separate.
I think Jesse's onto something there.
It was made out of balsa wood.
It was probably made out of spruce.
Nah. So when
it was just a clever name.
When we saw the channeling technology, and then even more so at the end, they had those four electro beams they were using that right when Discovery
electro beam.
Spore jumped away. It reminded me of what they shoot out of their proton packs in the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, yes.
Especially the second set.
It was probably the same filter, the same effect in Adobe After Effects that they used.
Yeah, but that was a pretty cool effect. And then of course, so we've been getting Stamets's main role in this whole season has been to just find the technobabble solution, just kind of say a bunch of stuff, and that's
frequently his role.
That seems like it's been more so.
Frequently Geordi and Data's role.
But we...
Dax's role.
Well, I mean, in previous seasons, I feel like we got more Stamets, like, personal life.
Sure,
and stuff.
Sure, but we've...
and it's not just Stamets. It's a Stamets and Adira, and, too. Because remember, they were...
Adira and Culber.
They were both like...
To match the archive shield frequency. Yeah. The tunnel would automatically close.
I did enjoy that. It was cute.
Yeah, so...
They're cute.
I don't know.
I love when you two do that.
Yeah. Now, it's good that Stamets has had most of his personal stuff resolved because I like the personal stuff, but I do agree that, you know, it's almost like you're torturing the characters if it goes on forever. Now, then you can have the problem like with Adira. I really, really love Adira as a character, but they haven't shown up a lot this season. I mean, they're there, but... They're focusing on other things.
Adira, when they were on the bridge for the first time.
Yeah. Oh,
that was pretty
great.
Awesome.
There's great stuff, but they have become a much more minor character.
Blue Del Barrio.
Yeah.
They do a really great job of like Adira's sort of like nervous sort of
behavior. That's why I like the character. But speaking of, I thought another really interesting thing going back to the character of Maul is I noticed that Maul is always rocking back and forth from one foot to another. It was an affectation that we've seen in previous episodes.
Evidence!
But, well, you'll have to go back and watch those episodes. But it was very clear in this episode, particularly at the end, where she just, it's almost like the cameraman's almost having trouble keeping up with her. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about that, I don't know, I presume it was a choice made by the actor, because rocking back and forth from one foot to the other can indicate so many things. It can just indicate anxiety. It can be like a coping mechanism to deal with like agitation or restlessness or whatever. However, it's also something that can be associated with autism spectrum disorder or just being autistic. You know, it's not always, not necessarily a disorder. However, it can also be associated with, there's a disorder called akathisia, a condition that causes people to feel an uncontrollable urge to move.
Let's move.
They may also rock
while sitting.
They may pace or march in place.
Sometimes they dance.
Hang on, everybody!
I don't think I have this, but I don't know. I kind of identified with that, you know, as a nervous reaction to kind of comforting yourself by sort of rocking back and forth. Whatever it is, I don't know exactly what's going on there, other than to say I'm enjoying it as something that I've noticed that the character's been doing. Dan has no opinion on that.
I mean,
Jesse, do you have an opinion?
I didn't notice it, but now I want to notice it.
I didn't actually notice that either, but that's good.
That's your assignment for next week to see if she rocks back and forth on her
feet. I like the final move she did when she zapped Rule with that thing. That was a pretty slick move.
Yeah.
And he all stumbled backwards.
Speaking of final moves, are there any final thoughts about this episode?
Well, so Book got the Tuli root. I wonder what you can do with that.
The Deku nut, you mean?
Not the Deku nut. Yeah, no.
She found the Deku nut?
No, not the Deku nut.
Yeah, no, the Hyrel said there is a Deku nut.
It was Tuli.
No, it was a Deku nut.
No, it wasn't. Stop it. You know you're wrong. You know you're making a joke.
Then why are you smiling?
Because you're making a Zelda
you're
joke.
You're smiling because it was a Deku nut. It was a Deku
you're making
nut
a Zelda
a Deku
joke.
Tree.
So I wonder what you can do with this root. Maybe you can plant a tree with it. I don't know. But she was like, you can take this, but
it'll come back.
But she was like, you can take this, but you know, make sure you bring it back.
Meaning, she didn't say bring it back. She said, make sure you call us up and let us know what happened to it. That's what she said. Look in the script. I assure you.
Are you sure about that?
I assure you. She did not say.
I would agree with what he said. I remember.
Yeah. Because in fact, I thought she was going to say, I was expecting she would say, bring it back sometime. And she didn't say that. She said,
we would only ask that you return someday and tell us what's become of it so we may have a record. Return.
Return, not return it.
And tell us.
Yeah,
exactly.
But
no, you are wrong, Dan. Read it.
Return.
No, she said, return and tell us what happened to it. Not return with it. Not bring it back.
But the point that I was making about that is she's basically, I don't care if he comes back with it or not. The point is that she's asking him to return, which means she's asking
not with a nut.
She's having... Let me fucking say what I'm gonna say.
Nope.
It wasn't a nut. It was a root. She was saying, just make sure you return later and tell me about it. What she's also saying is, make sure you fucking put your life at risk trying to go through the Badlands to come back and fuck up your ship so you can tell us all about it. Like, that's just like,
maybe they'll move.
That's like, she's really putting a lot. She's being put upon here.
You could return to the library once they've moved to a safer location.
I mean, it's one thing if she let him have it and was like, yeah, just drop me a line sometime and tell me about it. Or if it's like, oh, just stop by my house down the street to return it. No, she's saying, risk your life to go through the Badlands in order to tell me about it. Like, that's a big...
I'm surprised he took it. What it means is this will definitely play into the resolution of the season. Maybe he'll bring Quajon back by using this root and the progenitor technology. I don't know. But because logically, it's foolish for him to take it.
And
it's foolish for him to take one of the last remaining vestiges, which is currently presumably pretty safe, Breen aside, on this station, on this library.
Okay.
That's their whole job is keeping things safe. And he's going to take it on his adventures.
My point is that she is putting a lot on his shoulders by asking him to travel through the Badlands.
You've said that many times.
I know, and I'm saying that that's fucked up.
Okay. All right.
And you have not expressed that you understood that I said that.
I understand it. I just don't particularly agree with it. Mm.
You don't think he has to go through the Badlands to come back?
Like Jesse said, maybe they'll move by that time. Secondly, it doesn't matter to me because to me, I was just making the point that she didn't say to bring the thing back. She said to bring information.
That was never my point.
Like it was.
No, it wasn't my point.
It seemed like it was.
No, I just told you what my point was. If you think it seems like that's the point I was making, then you weren't listening to what I was saying
now. I'm listening to what you're
saying. Because I said it doesn't matter if he brings it or not. He still has to go through the Badlands. All
right. Well, that's not a big deal.
I think that's a big deal.
In Deep Space Nine, they were going to the Badlands all the fucking time to hide for shit.
They lost 75% of their future 31st century shields.
Yeah, okay.
Or 32nd century.
I don't think that big a deal.
I think...
anything else? Any other bits?
There's
bits and bobs.
Here's the next episode of Fast Talkin' Burnham.
Oh, yes. This is my favorite. I do like this.
So quiet for the Fast Talkin' Burnham, please. All right. This is another episode of Fast Talkin' Burnham.
Derex was a neuroscientist, so what kind of test would she have created?
Oh, shit. Hold on. Sometimes it's hard to hit these buttons. Hold on. Let's try it again.
Derex was a neuroscientist, so what kind of test would she have created? What about yes or no questions? Can you answer those? I assume this is here for a reason? There's nothing in the Dominion War section or any other wars. Well, there are mathematical methods for solving mazes. I just need to find a way to mark my path to eliminate routes. For what it's worth, I prefer this version of you that is helpful.
Why are you making this so hard? I know where the final clue is. We need to get there first.
Nothing in Beta Zeta history, true history of the Mirror Universe.
There's a lot this week. What was the second one?
What about yes or no questions? Can you answer those?
That's my favorite one. What about next yes or no questions? Can you
answer
those?
What about yes or no questions? Can you answer those?
I think Beta said history, true history of the Mirror Universe in the Dominion War section or any other war.
That's a good thing. Okay.
I was going to play also a game of Duty or No Duty.
Okay. Duty or No Duty, and then we'll close things
out. So two quick games. This one's pretty easy. This is first Duty or No Duty. I think I know what everyone's going to say. It's pretty audible to me. If I can hit the button.
I mean, I get it. You have a duty. Your mission.
it's almost even not even worth
it. I know, right? That's a definite no duty for
no
everyone.
Duty.
Okay, what about this one?
No diggity.
What about this one?
It is part of our sacred duty to ensure that cultures that are lost are never forgotten.
There's no duty. No duty. No duty for me.
Just, yeah. No duty?
No duty.
Yeah.
Wait.
Sacred duty. Sacred duty. Sacred duty.
I say duty.
To me, I hear it.
The T is a little crisp. There's a little crispness on that T.
Sacred duty.
Any others?
Okay, those are the only two. So we have Patrick and Jesse say no duty, I say a definite duty.
All right. Well, write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
I'm not jokingly.
Definite duty.
Duty or no duty. The one very final question before we close things down is, what do you think the trick is for getting to the progenitor's technology? We don't know. The audience doesn't know. Burnham heard something from magical imaginary book in her mindscape. Burnham learned some sort of tactic, and I was like, okay, it's a Betazoid person. Maybe they got to be naked to see the technology.
It's hot.
Maybe we'll see Will Riker or Picard. I could see them having Picard because remember all these scientists that got together. Hey, who knows? Maybe Picard was one of them. Right? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know he's maybe not on the list where they haven't called it out.
That's
an
interesting concept.
That'd be into seeing Picard, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I'd be into seeing Will Riker just because, or some version of Jonathan Frakes, because Jonathan Frakes has been on basically every show. Now Discovery is ending, but he's been on every show up till Discovery. He hasn't been on Discovery and hasn't been on Strange New Worlds, but Strange New Worlds is still going. But he's been on Lower Decks. He's been on Enterprise. He's been on all Deep Space Nine. Jonathan Frakes has Voyager. Is he going to show up? He's directing next week's episode. Next week's episode is called LaGrange Point.
LaGrange.
LaGrange Point. Anyway, I don't know. We can only guess, but there's got to be some fun thing that Burnham learned.
Close your eyes and say, I believe.
So we'll figure that out next week, I guess.
I believe.
When we watch LaGrange Point, directed by Jonathan Frakes.
I just want to point out that
a Targoon is a sacred Breen oath.
Targoon is a sacred Breen oath. Yeah. Not like an Araga, which is a Breen blood oath. Yeah. Two different oaths.
Blood
well spotted.
Two
man.
Different oaths. Yeah,
they've got a lot of oaths, and apparently they don't mean that much.
No, they don't.
All right, so that's it for this week. That has been Labby Rinths. And
let's move. Let's fly.
We already did the email a bunch. www.discussstartrek.com for the website. By the way, if you're a newer listener, at the website you can organize by series because we're discussing Discovery now, but we discuss all the Star Trek series. We've had 240 episodes already, including some bonus episodes. So go to the website. You can sort through if you just want to hear us talk about Deep Space Nine or Voyager, whatever. Go check it out on the website. If you would like to leave us a voicemail, you can send us in an MP3 or whatever, or go to itscottstartrek.com/record and record up to 90-second voicemail for us.
Great.
Patreon. Don't miss out on the Patreon. I know we mentioned it before, but it's patreon.com/itscottstartrek.
That's one hell of a test.
Patreon.com/itscottstartrek. Some really fun stuff over there. Not all of
it. I don't think your scion would look very kindly upon that.
There's some good stuff there. And social media, of course, at itscottstartrek, just about everywhere.
Your request is denied.
Including YouTube and all that good stuff. Otherwise, yeah. We hope you have a good week. Until
was that meant as a joke?
Until next week when we discuss LaGrange Point.
We've paused.
Goodbye.
We could direct a positron beam right to where the tunnel meets the archive shields, and then if we set the beam to a different frequency.
That's it. Do it again.
The tunnel would automatically close.